date is commemorated by Palestinians as a catastrophe, which has put the entire region in an unending struggle. Over 60 years since the Nakba, Palestinians are still struggling for an independent state on their own land. Now, Israel and the West celebrate the same occasion as the declaration of the State of Israel. However, over 400 Palestinian villages were destroyed after the founding of Israel. And today, some 4.7 million Palestinians live in exile. The current changes in the Arab world and in Palestine itself have led many to foreshadow that Palestine could become at the center of Arab politics. Now let's get more on this issue. I am joined by Dr. Soheil Al-Natour from the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, also by Dr. Oman Nashebi, who is editor at Al-Akhbar Daily. We're also joined by Mr. Bob Ayers. He is international security analyst, and he's joining us from London. Let me begin with you, Mr. Al-Natour. Now, the 15th of May is considered the National Day of Israel. However, at the same time, Palestinians are calling for protests. Could we see a third intifada on the rise?
Well, third intifada doesn't need only an occasion to begin. Third intifada is the accumulation of the crimes committed by the Israelis on one hand and by the internal Palestinian conflicts on the other hand. So I think the reasons for another intifada are accumulating, even with the possibility that the international arena will not play its role with the justice when the Palestinians will go to UN and ask for the independent Palestinian state on the territories of West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem as its capital. If the Palestinians will fail, we'll have another intifada. If the Palestinians will win, and I'm sure will win, the acceptance of the international community, but Israel is not going to withdraw, then we will have another intifada in both sides.
Yes. Now, Dr. Oman Nashebi, how do you look at the situation now as we see the Palestinian reconciliation? Does that symbolize Arab reconciliation, especially after the Arab changes, that there could be some kind of unity, especially on the Palestinian issue?
Yes, we hope so. I mean, this is still the beginning of the process. So perhaps in the coming weeks, we will see more concrete results. The what will happen on the 15th in this popular movement towards the south and this demonstration, this could be an opportunity to test the waters, to see if the Arab masses are going to respond to this call by the Palestinian people, this basic call for basic human rights. And I want to say on this level that in 1948, in that same year when the Zionist state declared its independence in violation of the very basic human rights principles, I think that the coming days will bring a lot of new. It's going to be a turning point in the Arab-Israeli conflict, and I hope that in the end, everyone will receive their rights and justice will be served, and that's the main principle. The respect for United Nations Resolution 338, 194, 242, Israel has been violating all these resolutions. Israel has been violating the Geneva Conventions, using weapons, unlawful weapons in Gaza recently, has been involved in targeted assassinations. The last was Mr. Mabhouh, as far as we know, in Dubai. They enter other states, they kill people, they use this kind of terrorism against others, and that is not supposed to be tolerated by the international community. However, the United States has proved only a few weeks ago that it's not even ready to tolerate a resolution by the Security Council to condemn the expansion of the settlements, and that's really the only nation in the world that defends Israel when Israel violates this principle.
Yes, allow me go to Mr. Bob Ayers in London. Now, what Dr. Oman Nashebi just said is just one part of the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. Now, since the declaration of Israel, of course, the U.S. was successful in having its allies make agreements with Israel, trying to create some kind of an accord. However, the struggle still goes on, and many say that the U.S.'s ultimate support for Israel is what is causing all this conflict. How do you look at that from your perspective, and what can the U.S. do in its foreign policies?
Well, the first thing we have to recognize is that both sides, both the Arab side and the Israeli side, can cite long lists of grievances and things the other side did wrong. And that's a waste of time. What we have to be doing is addressing what steps can be taken to achieve some sort of resolution to the problem before us. We have a problem right now in that the Palestinians themselves are represented by two organizations, Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, that have very different views on the way ahead. Hamas believes that Israel does not have a right to exist. The Palestinian Authority wants to negotiate with Israel and try to work up a peaceful resolution. So we have two different philosophies representing the Palestinians, and it's unclear to me which one of those speaks for the Palestinians, because they both cannot do so.
Yes, now what you're saying is correct. Now what if we see some kind of cooperation, since many, of course, strategic analysts believe that resistance, military resistance, especially in Palestine, is almost impossible to stop. Do you think that there could be some kind of cooperation perhaps between Hamas, its resistance wing, and the political leadership of Fatah? Perhaps something similar to what we saw in Lebanon. There was the resistance and there was some kind of cooperation between the government and the army, and therefore that created the liberation of Lebanon.
Well, the state of Israel is not going to go away, no matter how hard organizations may wish them to. Israel is there and is going to remain there, and Israel will take whatever steps necessary to defend itself. What we have to do is to recognize that in this region, there are different cultures and different groups of people that are going to have to learn to live together. You're never going to be able to drive Israel away. You're never going to be able to conquer it militarily. The Israelis will never be able to conquer militarily their Arab neighbors. So what are we going to do? I suggest what we have to do is to pursue a course of action as Hamas wishes to do, which the Palestinian Authority wishes to do, which is to negotiate with Israel and try to negotiate a peaceful resolution. Mm-hmm. Taking to the streets, protesting, and violence will not achieve that.
Mm-hmm. All right, well,
It strikes me that at the beginning of your talk, you truthfully said that both sides can actually talk about grievances, and that was a balanced statement to start with. But yet, later on in your speech, you said that nothing will remove the state of Israel, but you did not equate that with also the fact that nothing since the creation of the Zionist state could stop the resistance of the people to achieve their basic rights, and that is the right to return to their homes. And the United Nations supported this basic right, and these people are going to struggle, and this nothing is going to stop the struggle of the Palestinian people, supported hopefully by as many Arabs and as many honest people around the world. This is not an Arab and an Islamic issue. This is a basic rights issue. And the people have the right to return to their homes. This is what it all comes down to. I understand all the complications that you just mentioned, the differences in the representation of the Palestinians, the differences among Palestinians, and there are also differences among Israelis. I mean, and we have seen really strong, striking differences between Israelis and really the extreme right wing, the extreme Orthodox Jews, the settlers. There are also differences there. I mean, also these differences pose great problems and obstacles to any peaceful settlement. So I think that I believe that also Dr. Matou would agree that, okay, if we're going to talk in a balanced way, yes, let's equate both sides, although despite the fact that I think both of us here have lived so much of the suffering of the Palestinian people and our people, and have seen the hundreds of thousands and millions of refugees suffer and continue to suffer in refugee camps, and I think that cannot be equated with the life of so many Israelis living in a land that they could all live together. And I think that's the main object. We can all live together and share this land. And I think the problem today is the fact that there are millions of Palestinians suffering with the worst kinds of suffering. And you can read reports by Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, not even Arab organizations. I mean, also international organizations. Whereas the Palestinians, I don't wish the suffering for the Jewish population at all. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that there is no equal stance between the two groups. So, but we're ready to actually negotiate. But at least let this discussion be balanced between both groups, if possible.
Yes, Mr. Ayers, I will give you time to comment on Dr. Amna Shebi's statements, if you like, and also answer me about the issue of the settlement building. This has been a primary issue of stopping negotiations. The U.S. has not stood strongly enough to ask for Israel to stop this. This is what many Arabs consider biased.
Well, unquestionably, the U.S. is biased toward Israel. They're a very staunch ally of Israel, and they have a very strong Israeli lobby in the Washington political establishment. I would point out, however, that, and I agree with the previous speaker, in that everyone should be able to live together, but I would point out that as a precondition to living together, at least one of the participants in this political process, Hamas, refuses to abandon their philosophy that says Israel has no right to exist. Now, you can't expect Israel to negotiate in good faith with an organization whose only objective is to destroy the Israeli state. So there has to be some significant changes made if negotiations are going to proceed in any productive manner.
Yes, let me allow Dr. Sohanna to
I think
to
we have to go back to the beginning. The beginning, that are we equal as peoples? If the peoples are equal, so that means the representation of the people must be also equal. We have chosen as Palestinians that PLO is representing the Palestinians. Exactly. No one is allowed to play on the internal conflicts and the differences of the Palestinians. As we are asked to deal with the Israelis by the official representation at the government, we know that there are extremists who are denying the right of existence to the Palestinians, the right of the land of the Palestinians, the right of return, everything they are negating. But there is a stand which is calling to negotiate for peace and to coexist between the Israelis. That's why we are dealing with the representative. No one will say that has a right to say this is Hamas or this is...
They have all come under the umbrella of the PLO.
PLO. Now, on the contrary, I'll give an example that the Israelis insisted all the time that there is no negotiator from the part of the Palestinians, and it was that time the Palestinian Authority who are negotiating.
Yeah, in Madrid,
and now they are saying that there is no negotiator because Hamas is included in the reconciliation.
Yes.
So what the hell is this? As far as we are going like this, I think that means we are taking the Zionist interpretation of the situation. What we have to say is what is the legality, international legality. International legality said by the partition say that the partition resolution 181 said about 51% for the Israelis and 49% for the Palestinians. Now Israel is occupying 78%, and we are asking for an independent state on the 22. Even with this, they are insisting about, under the pretext, exchanging of land, swapping the land. They want to take, and there is a process of settler colonialism which is negating the right of Palestinians or to exist or to stay in his homeland, and they are withdrawing the IDs of the Palestinian, the right of residence, everything. So let's go directly. If they want peace, they have to talk to the Palestinians united as they represent themselves, and to say that we are abiding by UN resolutions. There is a resolution recognizing the right of return. Until now, no one of the Americans or the Israelis is insisting on this. On the contrary, now they are insisting that the Palestinians, they have to recognize the Jewishness of the state. Which state? Tell me about the borders of Israel, if it is a state and recognized by the UN. What are the borders of Israel to recognize this state?
Yes. And if I may add, it's more than 78%, because the apartheid wall that they built is built inside the West Bank. If they built a wall around the area that is according to the borders of the partition, Okay, that could be a different issue. But they're building a wall, and they're continuing to build the wall inside the West Bank. And that is a clear violation of all the agreements that happened before. How are you supposed to go to a peace negotiations and trust the people you are negotiating with and trust the agreement that you come up with if this agreement in the past was not respected? That's the big question.
Yes, Mr. Bob Ayers, of course, I need to give you your time. I need to hear your comments on what you just heard, especially on the issue that many Arabs believe that both Fatah and Hamas are destined to come together. They are both strong Palestinian groups. They have to come together. However, Hamas will also accept that one group will be negotiating on behalf of all the Palestinians. But there are still United Nations resolutions. If those are implemented, if a Palestinian state is declared, wouldn't that create or put aside many problems for both the Israelis and the Palestinians?
It certainly would. However, the establishment of a Palestinian state must be something that is mutually agreeable to the state of Israel. They're going to be neighbors. You cannot have an external authority, like the United Nations, for example, decree that this part here constitutes the state of Palestine without Israeli acceptance. That's exactly the same sort of a resolution that started the problem in the first place. We go back to the Balfour Agreement. You have an arbitrary statement of partition by an external party that leads to conflict. So to go back and repeat the same process, except substituting the United Nations for Lord Balfour, isn't going to achieve a different result.
Yeah, well, but Balfour was made by the British government. We're talking here about the United Nations. And after World War II, we agreed, I think the international community agreed, that it is the United Nations, and specifically the Security Council, that resolves problems of security. And I think that's the agreement. Okay, maybe I'm being theoretical, perhaps, yet it is based on these theories and these ethics that we're supposed to find solution to problems. And I think there's
You're not being theoretical at all. You're right, exactly. However, let's be practical. The United Nations is not going to pass a resolution that the U.S. objects to, because they'll veto it. The U.S. will object to any resolution that the state of Israel does not concur with.
Okay, what about
the
resolution?
You're not going to get the...
Excuse me to interrupt, but may I ask, what about the resolutions that the U.S. agreed upon and that Israel continues to violate until today? Let's take Security Council Resolution 242, withdrawal of the West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights. Why isn't Israel internationally acting as an international criminal by violating this resolution that is considered international law?
I think there's still a recognition and a sentiment, perhaps, that the reason that Israel occupied the Golan Heights and the West Bank was not as a result of an unilateral military action on the part of Israel. It was in response to an attack on the state.
Whatever, but there is a resolution. Excuse me to interrupt. Mm-hmm. I apologize for that. But I just want to make it clear for the viewers that there is a resolution. It's the law. In Latin, dura lex, sed lex. The law is tough, but that's the law. So why doesn't Israel respect
the law? It's only a law if there is an organization willing to enforce the law.
But that's not the UN Charter.
If there's no organization willing to enforce it, you don't have a law. You have wishful thinking.
Yes, let me come to another issue, please. Dr. Natour, the Arab changes, the changes in the Arab regimes and so on, can we say that they will really impact the Palestinian issue? Perhaps they could help solve or resolve the Arab-Israeli conflict. Can we say that the first reconciliation between Palestinians is the first impact of these changes?
Well, we hope that this process will be overwhelming in all the areas of the Arab world. But we are patient and we are going to see the things by practice. What the first step, which was done by the changes in the new government in Egypt, despite its temporary timing of government, this is the beginning of a pan-Arabist wave which was lost by the old regime. And this is very, very positive that they pushed first to open the gate of Rafah to finish with the blockade, not imposed by the Americans and the Israelis, but also by some Arab regime at that time. Now, well, at least this link is open. The second positive thing is to encourage the two big conflictual two organizations to reconcile. And in this, I think that with the acceptance of the Arab regimes, other Arab regimes, and this is beginning to creating a new hope for the Palestinians and for all the Arabs that, yes, the Palestinians, they are going to continue because they are trying back to gather their forces in acceptance with the revolutionary democratic regimes created by the populations and by the demonstrations.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I think this will be very important, and mm-hmm. what we are seeing in other parts also will encourage to continue that. What were the mistakes done by Hamas or the mistakes done by Fatah, now I think the Palestinian people began to say that also we have to go on and make accountability for our leaders and oblige them to unite. It's an objective mm-hmm. need, an objective fact.
Yes. Let me get to this one point from Mr. Ayers before we lose him. Mr. Ayers, now the changes, especially in Egypt, seem to show that the U.S. has lost a stark ally, which has, of course, been very collaborative with both the U.S. and Israel. And now that, could that change the U.S. foreign policy?
Well, let's consider your statement that a little bit. It's still unclear as to whether or not Israel has lost an ally in Egypt. Assuming the peaceful revolution in Egypt continues and the end result is some form of a democratic Egypt, it's certainly debatable as to whether or not a democratic Egypt would still want to associate themselves as a political or economic ally with Israel, or whether they want to sever those ties. One of the things that we should all hope for as a result of the Arab Spring is that we're seeing autocratic governments being challenged, overthrown, or replaced by people whose only interest is in a better life and democracy. And that's something that will spread throughout the region. If we can begin to chip away at the belief in the mind of the state of Israel that they're surrounded by dictators, they're surrounded by autocrats who are dedicated only to the destruction of the state, then their reason for being as belligerent as they have been over time is removed. And we should look forward to that.
Yes, great. Final question. Our time is running up.
Yes.
Would the agreement between the Palestinians, would that, live up? Would the Palestinians live up to their agreements?
I hope so. Let's wait and see. But I just want to remind the viewers that that Israel and the state or the Zionist state did not even respect the Camp David Accord. The Camp David Accord stated that there should mentioned that there should be a creation of a state of Palestine. I think the Egyptians respected their part of the agreement. The Israelis did not respect their part. This is not very encouraging for a peaceful settlement in the future. Let's be very honest and very truthful, even regardless of what I think of the Camp David agreement and what others think. I just want to say that this is a very simple cause, and I think it's always the supporters of Israel always complicate things, and it's not complicated at all. It's about the right of return. It's about people who want to go back home. That's what it all comes down to. People can live together, we can change the map, we can change the borders, that's a different issue. But it's about millions of people living as refugees, degraded, mm-hmm. humiliated day by day, living in poverty, living in without any nationality, living with the violations of human rights. They want to go back home. And therefore, it is very clear that the resistance will not stop. The resistance in all shapes and forms will continue all around the Arab world and the Islamic world.
Dr. Aman Ashabi, I want to thank you very much. I'm sorry. Stop you to interrupt you right there, but our time has run out. Dr. Sahil Matul, thank you for joining us. Mr. Bob Ayers, I want to thank you also. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. Stay with Press TV. Goodbye for now.
your armies, all your fighters, all your tanks, and all your soldiers against the boy holding a stone, standing there all alone. In his eyes, I see the sun. In his smile, I see the moon. And I only wonder, who is weak and who is strong? Who is right and who is wrong? And I only wish that the truth has a tongue.